All right. Welcome, everybody, to another weekly REI Vault huddle call. Today is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2015. Welcome to the call. Excited to have you. Let's see. Normally, we start this with just any updates. So in a moment, I will ask Chris if he has, Chris Chico, if he has any updates. And then once we do that, we will open up the call. This is informal. You can ask whatever you would like. It can be related to a specific deal, something that, you know, you're working on, or something that you have a question on regarding to REI Vault or the direct mail or Podio or whatever it is. This is unscripted. Also, you should know a couple things. For some of you that are fairly new, we put a lot of the training materials and links of where to go and what to do at www.reivault.com/start. And that just has a bunch of links how to connect with us. If you have any technical needs whatsoever, you can always email support@salesteamlive.com, and you'll get an instant ticket number so that we can track it and make sure that we're responding carefully. We've got about 20 people behind the scenes that are interacting. And some of you that get an email back from Ryan, by the way, Ryan is actually probably 12 different people. So somebody asked me, they said, I just got an email back from Ryan, and I kind of snickered a little bit and laughed because we've got a whole support team behind this group. If you ever have a deal question, something specific to a deal, real estate related, we want those to go directly to Chris and myself, and we're adding other people onto the team within our community to help out as we grow. And you can email dealhelp@reivault.com, and it allows us to get to the answer and to the right person faster. And if you have any suggestion or idea of how to improve this group or what you'd like to see, email suggestion box at reivault.com. It's a special place that Chris and I are always reviewing in terms of what's next. What do we add to make this make more money for all of us, make this more efficient, et cetera. So with that, Chris, any updates for the week you'd like to share?
I don't have any. Actually, I wanted to just cover one thing of a ticket that came in the other day, and I answered. And about a stuck a particular member was having, and I think it's a stuck that sometimes people have, and I wanted to kind of share the answer, and I'd love to hear Steve's input on this. By the way, so it's here on the call today we have myself, obviously, Gary, and Steve, who say hello, Steve.
Hello, Steve.
So, Steve, if you guys have heard the call where we there's a call that we have that talks about how to position yourself with as calling from a company instead of the individual investor to give you a better way of communicating with the seller, to deflect, perhaps, to make sure that the seller feels that you're on their side trying to do the deal and not in an adversarial position. So if you guys have listened to that call, Steve is the one that did the call, and Steve is on the team here with us, and he's pretty much the guy in charge when it comes to doing our deals down here in the South Florida area. As a matter of fact, as we're here today, we have two closings today.
Yes.
on a few deals and a few more we're trying to sell as over the next day or so. And so so one of the things that I wanted to cover was that somebody had sent in a ticket about that they were getting stuck on values and getting stuck on an ARV and figuring out what a property is worth. And my answer, and I'd love to hear your response, Gary, and also Steve, is that my answer to him was not that I don't try and figure out what a property is worth, that my intent is really to figure out what is the least amount that I can get that property at. And secondarily, if I feel that at that amount that I am putting the property in the contract, or that I have the potential to put the property in the contract, if I see that there's an opportunity for me to make money off of that deal. And so my decision, so I'm not looking at, hey, how much is it worth? I'm looking at what's the lease that I can buy it for, and does there appear to be enough margin that I can wholesale it and make some money? And obviously the decision to put it on the contract. Also, the underpinnings of that is, of course, price, as I just mentioned. It's also, hey, you know, am I able to put it on the contract under the terms that I like? You know, am I able to put it on the contract with a long enough inspection period for me to try to sell it? Am I going to be able to put it on the contract, you know, without having to put up any money for a down payment or deposit until after the inspection period upon which the buyer would put that deposit in? And so all those things are a factor, but I don't really look at, hey, what is it worth? I'm looking at, hey, is there a chance here for me to at least take a chance on this property and make some money? So I'd be curious to know what you have to say about that, Steve, because you and I go back and forth all the time on that. And also, Gary, do you want to go first, Steve?
Sure. I agree with just trying to get it signed on, just trying to get the contract. Essentially, I don't know what any property is worth at the end. I have an idea what I'd like to try and sell it for. So end value, I don't care, because my end value is completely different than everybody else's end value. It depends on where you're from, what you're looking at it for, what you want to do with it, what you think needs to be done to it. So when it comes to picking up a property, as long I just try and get the cheapest price possible. And if
and I was going to say, many times there's properties that have sold recently that
I'm blown away.
You are blown away.
By the way, and here's let me throw this in. We recently had a couple properties that I didn't think we're ever going to sell. But guess what? They sold, and they sold at the last minute, you know, the last day of our inspection period, whatever might be the case. Somebody ended up coming through, and I might not have made what I wanted to make on the deal, but I made something. I don't care. And kind of going into it with that attitude, you know, we all want to make $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $80,000 a deal. Those don't exist anymore. And if they do, they're few and far between. At this point, my attitude is, here's what I got for that. And, you know, if I'm negotiating on the final day of inspection period with somebody, I'll tell them, I go, listen, I picked it up at X. Get me more than that, and I'll split it with you. So we might walk away with $1,000, $2,000, whatever it is, but it's something. So when it comes to the ARV, I'm not concerned with that. There's just too many variables involved, and too many people have different opinions on what could be done. You know, you're looking at a rental value, a flip value. I'm also finding a lot more rental values lately than flips. Somehow the way the market is these days, I'm looking at everything with an ROI. I'm not even, because the comps aren't there. So I got to sell it with an ROI. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think that. Any comments on that, Gary?
Yeah, I mean, if you're even in the ballpark on price, I'm now of the opinion of put it under contract. Half the battle is getting a contract signed, because there's an emotional decision to part with the asset. And you know, there's also a lot of relationship building that goes on and, you know, trust. So there's a lot of decisions that a seller goes through when they're deciding to sell the property. And one is price, right? People buy or sell on emotion, and they justify it with facts. That's just a rule of sales 101. They buy or sell on emotion, but they have to justify it with facts. What that means is they're really making the emotional decision to sell and part with the asset for whatever reason. But then once they do that, they need to justify it. And that's why sometimes they'll decide to sell something and then they'll go silent, because they really haven't, you know, either emotionally really committed, or that they start needing more information. Sometimes the seller, you know, asks a lot of questions. They'll ask questions. Those are buying signals or selling signals. I call them buying because we're in the business of sales. But if somebody's pushing back, if there's another rule, which is if they're not pushing back, they're not buying. So I get really nervous if a seller doesn't have any questions, because you want the questions. So embrace those questions. Those are all buying signals or selling signals. So embrace them and handle them, because, you know, people need to justify with facts and feel comfortable. I'm of the opinion of taking the property off the table. I'm going to tell a story. Actually, I'm going to tell two stories real quickly. So Chris and I, we're closing a deal on Friday. We've been working on this for months. but the seller wanted $350,000, and they were committed to $350,000. They would not move on $350,000, right? So we're actually buying it. We signed paperwork. The seller signed all the paperwork. We're flipping the property. We're going to make $30,000 on Friday, and we ended up picking it up for $190,000. So that's a big difference. $350,000, 95% of investors would walk away from that deal, and we didn't. We got it for $190,000. We actually got it into contract for $220,000. All right. So it just goes to show you, you know, all said and done, we probably would have put that, knowing what we know today in this market, we probably would have put that under contract for even higher. All right. Second story I'll share is Chris, take a note of this, if you would, just as a reminder for me. I talked with Travis yesterday. Travis is an experienced investor. He's in Seattle. But I recorded a call with him yesterday that I'm going to post for everybody. And so he told me a story about 2 months ago. I'm on the phone with Travis, and he's having the same discussion. He goes, what do you think if somebody wants this ridiculous price and we're way off? What do you think? And I said, does the guy really want to sell? And he said, yeah, he does, but, you know, he's just stuck on the price. And I said, how much? And he goes, $250,000. So I said, go get the deal. Go get the contract signed. So he went out and he got the contract signed for $250,000. All right? There was a 21-day contingency, you know, inspection period for 21 days. So anyway, he went out to the property, met with the seller, got everything signed, and then he tried to start flipping the property, all right? But it wasn't really working. So I worked with Travis. He went out. He actually, I said, what do you really need that price to be? He said, $215,000 if it's all cash. So anyway, he actually went back to the seller a couple weeks later, and he kept interacting with the seller and keeping him up to date. The seller is now loving Travis. And so Travis told him, he goes, I just can't make this deal work for $250,000. And I could buy it for $215,000 or I have another idea. This is my suggestion. He goes, if you could be flexible on the terms, maybe, you know, carry back where you're not getting all the money right now, I could probably hit your $250,000 price. So he ended up getting the property for $250,000, and he has a 5% interest loan, non-recourse, with the seller. The seller is going to carry back 5% for 6 years, all right, 72 months. Amortized over 30 years. And he's actually going to flip this property. I'm not going to get into the crazy details. This will come out at some point because Travis and I are working on a kind of a new process that, you know, I think would be very relevant for all of us in the REI Vault Group. But what Travis is going to do is he's actually selling the property to another rehabber. He's going to make $8,000 on an assignment fee. But he's actually going to then take the money at 5% and be able to use it for other deals. It's a substitution of collateral in a very specific vehicle, so he can either do private lending with the money at 5% or he can put it into other collateralized, you know, backed deals. So we ran the math, and over 6 years, Travis is probably going to make about $100,000. Pretty good. So anyway, a lot of lessons here. I know that I talked. But the end, my net is I would go and get, if you're anywhere in the ballpark, I would get the contract signed. You know, you don't know until you actually start to sell the deal and try to find a buyer for it, and you can always renegotiate.
All right, and then with that said, I think that was the only thing I wanted to cover because I think it's an important concept is, bottom line, you don't know what property is going to sell for. They're going to surprise you. Do the best you can. Put on the contract and then, you know, work the deal. So,
yeah. Throw some one thing in.
Yeah.
I also like to really quickly add a deal we just did. When I set up the buy, I had spoken to the seller and said, listen, using my I work for a company scenario. Listen, I'm going to try and get this deal done at this number, but I'm going to tell you now, I might need to come back down the road and say, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try and do it, though, but I might need to get a couple bucks. And she agreed from contract date that she would drop it $1,500. We're not talking a big sale, so that was a decent percentage of the price, but she eventually actually dropped it $2,000. But because I set it up from the get-go, it was a real easy reduction at the end. I didn't even do the reduction. I told an agent that I was selling the house through to tell her we can only pay X amount, and he did, and she said, and he said she went for it. So my point is, setting it up like you're working for the company, and you're doing whatever you can for her, it builds trust, and you might get an easy price reduction down the road. That's just something I want to throw in there.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, for all of you, Steve, we had Steve on the call. It was actually, you could write this down. It's May 6th of last year. So May 6th of 2014, Steve was on a call and did an amazing job walking through how he's actually talking with sellers. And we've gotten a lot of really good feedback. You can go to the membership site and log in with your username and password, or your email and your password that you should all have. And on the left-hand side, there's a little search, and you can actually just type Steve, and it'll take you right to that call. Or you can go under coaching. It's under the coaching tab, under weekly huddle call archive, and it's the May 6th, 2014. And by the way, we have actually, this is based on, I think, John Roberts or Steve Carlson in the group sent an email, and they said, hey, it'd be really great if you could take all the calls and somebody could actually at least give us the minute markers and the summary of what we talked about. So the site is searchable, and we have minute markers for everything. So you can go in there like, at the 29:15 minute marker, the topic was when people want to deal with the person in charge, or 30 minute marker, 30 minute and 35 seconds, appearance of working for a big company. And Steve did a really good job. That's all on May 6th. So check that out and listen to it. There's a ton of nuggets, and it's awesome. Let's see. I have one other update. And that is that we are getting ready. We've been doing this new process I mentioned it the last couple of weeks in Podio, where we're able to identify the hang-ups and automatically text message the seller if it's a hang-up, which means the seller called and hung up within 20 seconds. We're automatically able to mark those or change the status to hang-up and then do a text message to the seller saying, hi, we've just missed a call from you. Do you have a property that you want to sell? And I've set this up for about 10 people, and it's working nicely. We're going to build some training so we can roll it out to everybody, but I do have some room. If a few of you that are actually on this call today live, you can, if you want to be added as the next in the queue to do it, go ahead and just email suggestionbox@reivault.com and ask to be put into, just put a little email in the subject, say, please add me to the beta, B-E-T-A, beta, for hang-ups and text messaging, and we'll get you set up. The only reason we haven't rolled it out to everybody is there's a lot of changes, and we haven't built all of the training, the nice, pretty training for everybody. So we could probably take another 5 or 6 people just to get you up and running and get some feedback. That's it, Chris, for me. Anything else before we open up the line for questions?
No, I want to say before we do a complete opening up of the lines, I do see a hand raised by Haynes, so I was going to go ahead and take that call first and then open up the line for general questions.
Perfect.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Haynes, you are live.
Okay, how you doing?
Great, how about you?
Doing great. Doing great. Doing great. Been working with Gary, and we've been emailing. Are you ready?
Yes, I am. Go ahead. We're ready.
Okay, yeah, I had 3 mailings, one in December, 2 in January. Let me see. We've had about 2,200 cards to go out, and we've got, I'd say 8 or 10, I'd say, viable leads. These are ones that the BAs did, ready to make offer. We've sent 2 or 3 pre-sales out, pre-sale letters. Got a couple more we're talking with. And don't have any particular questions, but any kind of guidance you might give. you know, I wasn't expecting an immediate sale, but it'd be nice.
Well, you said you had you sent out 200. You said you sent out 20, approximately 2,200 cards.
About 2,200.
And have you been also going through? You said you got 8 to 10 viable leads. Have you been going through the hangups as well and trying to call those back and seeing if they might be interested?
Well, we've had some confusion on that. I've called some hangups and two hangups sent it to be viable and. Actually, about three, and so I've just started this today, starting to call the ones that that are on Debbie's email, not the other ones. Which there are very few of them, but there are a few of them.
Okay. You know, as far as, and I'll have Gary comment on this, but as far as the total, you know, every market is different, right? So in certain markets. We have where, you know, if you send out 1,500 postcards plus or minus, then you have an opportunity of putting a deal in place. In other markets, it's a situation where, you know, that number might be upwards of 3,000, but that's an average, right? So, you know, there's nothing at face. In other words, if I just kind of look at your stats and the number of postcards sent, the number of viable leads, you send out 2 to 3 pre-sales. And I'll have Steve comment on the pre-sales. But there's nothing that looks out of place per se. You know, I think it's just, you know, kind of one thing. It's just there's nothing there that looks out of place, right? Because you know you're kind of there at the cusp, you know, because a lot of that has to do with some people. Many times people say, "Hey, Chris, how many postcards will it take?" And it's always a tough question because, again, it depends on the market, depends on the follow-up that you're doing with these people, how you come across, and I'm not saying you're coming across poorly or anything like that, but just in general, there's a lot of variables to account for. But right now, at this stage, with the numbers you're telling me, there's nothing that I see that's alarming. It might be good for as you work through the leads that you have right there to keep us posted on the results as you move forward. The one thing, though, Steve, you wanted to make a comment about the pre-sales.
Yeah, the pre-sales, I mean, you're sending out 2,200. I think it's great. And what you want to do is want to be building up. You're building up your own market. The pre-sales are amazing. And, you know, we've had a little bit of action on them. And what I do is if I don't have a conversation, if I don't come to a price on the phone with a person, I, of course, try and always leave it in a friendly manner. And then I'll immediately send a pre-sale out. And one day we got a contract back. And we didn't know. I had to look it up. I didn't even know. The lady got it, signed it, and sent it back after telling us she wouldn't sell us the house for lower than a certain amount. And I sent it for, you know, probably $5,000 or $10,000 under what we had discussed or what she was looking for. I picked a number I was comfortable with. And she sent it back. And we had a deal. And we sold it.
And then the ones that we have closing or the ones that we're trying to sell right now, we had sent them to pre-sale.
Carmali, the one in Fort Pierce, which is a tiny deal. The deal there is a very small revenue for us, but it was just a matter of, you know, in other words, oh, it was nice talking to you. I'm sorry we can't come to agreement. Maybe down the road. And to me, down the road means the next day, send them a contract or a pre-sale. And what it does is, it prompts them to either call us or in a couple of cases, they just sign it and send it back.
Yeah.
Like they almost forgot they had a conversation and they agreed to a certain number. So I would say you send out 2 to 3 pre-sales with 20, you know, if you talk to 100 people, you might should have sent out 40 to 50 pre-sales. I know that.
Yeah, I would definitely be aggressive on the pre-sales because that just like Steve said, some of them will send them back, but I think, also, more often than not, it creates an additional dialogue with the seller.
What happens is
let me add a couple things. So the numbers that you should be tracking towards and following is 1 in 7 or 1 in 10 pre-sale should come back signed. So that's what you should be working towards, Haynes and everybody, which is, you know, if you send out 10 pre-sales, to you know, lukewarm or even cold sellers, you know, where price is a big deal and they're not motivated, and you got 1 out of 10 back, you'll probably pick up even more off of the follow-up. But it should be a no-brainer. If you've done 2, then you know that you need, you know, somewhere between 5 and 8 more per deal.
Right.
And that's the way you'd be tracking it. And I would track that. I'd track that carefully. And and don't assume so much. You know, here's an example. I'd also be documenting all the interaction that you have with the seller. I'm looking at some of the leads. Like, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, Haynes, but I'm looking at Robert and Beverly Thomas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they left a message, you know. Can't tell the motivation, but they've got a property. They said they are interested in hearing what kind of offer you'd give them. It produces about $30,000 annually, so it's obviously a rental. And that lead came in 2 weeks ago, and I don't see any I don't see anything on it. What happened with Robert and Beverly Thomas?
He went on a cruise, and we're meeting at the property Friday. I'm going to make him an offer. Please.
Okay. Perfect. That's perfect. What I would do is in Podio, I would make sure you document, just add a little comment that what they're doing, and then next action date, and put the next action date of Friday, and just track it, because, you know, the metrics of what you're doing is really, that's the telltale sign, right? And the numbers that the real numbers we want to track are, what's the cost per deal? So right now you're at $1,500 is what you spend on marketing so far. And, you know, I think $1,500 in your market should be landing you a deal. And, and so I'd be tracking that. I'd be, you know, at $1,500, I would say that should get me at least one deal. And you should have at least 2 contracts signed, because you know that things go sideways, and just assume that, you know, you sign 2 contracts and one of them may go sideways. You may have overpriced it, or there may be a foundation issue or whatever. And I would say if you want to get one deal, you know, you should be sending out at least 10 of those pre-sale offers. When I say pre-sale offers, it could be a contract, but don't assume anything with these sellers. You know, putting something in front of them, it builds rapport. It gets them to really serious, know that you're serious, and it's triggering their hot button. You know what I mean? The last thing I'll say for everybody is we've actually made a change to the pre-sale. We're putting the pre-sale into a full 9x12 envelope now. We think that that'll actually even increase the conversion rate, because it's like it looks like the FedEx. It's more expensive. We've been absorbing that cost. We're starting to actually send those out more often now than we were doing once a week. We've set it up. We've brought those in-house to fulfill. And it goes out in a 9x12, which means that we don't fold the paper in half. It looks like a FedEx envelope.
Right.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Harris, I got a question for you real quick. When you say you're going to that property on Friday to make an offer, you're going there with a contract under your arm, correct?
I am, yes.
Okay, just want to make sure. You don't show up naked. You can be naked, but as long as you have a contract under your arm, you should walk away with a deal.
Yeah, and this is a triplex, and I don't, you know, Gary and I have talked about this. I'm going to probably wholesale that one, but I just don't really know exactly how to price it. We've talked about that too, but you figured a 14% ROI after taxes and insurance, so it sounds pretty decent. But anyway.
I mean, 14 after taxes and insurance, that does, again, depends on the area, but on our end, we typically sell anywhere, 18%.
You shoot for 20 to buy. And that doesn't we're including everything in that. We don't take
it's
out
gross,
tax
yeah,
gross.
It's gross hour.
So maybe the 16, 17 to buy, and then unloaded the 14, 15, something like that. And again, unloading it, whatever, it depends on the buyer. You might find an angel buyer that likes 10%. Load them up. You know?
Yep.
But yeah, definitely bring the contract. I bought a couple properties where I walked up with a contract, and the guy I was with was amazed that I got a person I never met in person in my life to sign a contract to sell their triplex, as a matter of fact. It was a triplex, one of them. And it was a great deal. So I had it in my hand, and I left their house with a contract. Didn't even give them a copy, because I only had one. But It's all building. It's building rapport and trust, and that's, I guess, what I had when I walked in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, who on the line hear this? Are you getting much success from the hang-ups?
Yeah,
Steve, you want to answer that? Go ahead, Steve.
We've had some success. We get some interest, and it's a process. If they hung up, they were typically,
advice I could say is just, you got to get to them. The longer you let them wait, so generally speaking, you want to get to them as quickly as you can, because if they just hung up and then you're calling them 3 or 4 or 5 days later, they're not going to remember versus if it's the same day or maybe the next day, et cetera.
Yeah, it's speed, call them back in a quick manner. And you got to work them. I mean, people hang up because they don't want to hear the message,
Right. Right.
So get them on the horn quick, Harrison. That's the answer.
Yeah. I found some of the hang-ups are pretty receptive. So, okay. Well, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Chris, anybody else press while we're doing this? You can press *5 if you have a question. If not, we will open up the line and force dialogue. I don't know if Eamon's on the line. Eamon, if you're on, Eamon had rapid-fire questions yesterday. They were all really good. I said, Eamon, I wish everybody would ask these questions on these calls and not be so shy. Ask away.
Cool. I'm gonna meet somebody here from California. Last 4-digit 0662. You're on.
Gary, it's Eamon. Ask and you shall receive, right, buddy? How you doing?
Yeah.
Hey, so we got on the phone yesterday. I actually called you, right? And,
yes, sir.
And you just fired off a bunch of questions, and didn't I say that? I said I asked these questions on the call, and because they're so good, and so you asked me, you said, hey, do you mind if I ask you a few questions? And it was like 20, right?
fair enough. Actually, I have a new one. Hi, Steve. My name's Eamon. First time talking to you, but I enjoy your calls there. I'm from Jersey, so you might hear the accent. That being said, you mentioned that
from Jersey.
I know it. Yeah, no, I heard that on the call, and I can hear it as well. That being said, you mentioned with a lady you were speaking to that you put the realtor on with her, and he ended up getting a price reduction. I'm wondering how you set that up, that you felt comfortable putting a realtor on the phone with her, and that didn't blow up the deal. Because even though I still do the third party sell, oftentimes it's more, my funding partner when we close, et cetera, et cetera. So can you speak to that any?
This is a particular realtor, and I have a couple of these people, and they don't necessarily act as retail realtors, but they have licenses, and they're realtors, but they sell to specifically investors. And I have a good relationship with a couple of them. And this guy in particular, the house, he knows the area better than me. The house is so far away from me, I wasn't going to look at it. I wasn't even going into the county it was in. So
you never look at
any. I never look at any properties. Yeah, I know. So forget that. But yeah. Anyway, it was far away, and I didn't know the area is a real bad area, but it has pockets of decentness. And this one was in a pocket of decentness. So I called this guy, and I said, here's the deal. I gave him my buy number. And I said, sell it. And he went to town and sold it. And I hooked him up with the seller. You know what? And I was able to do that, by the way. And I can trust him. Yeah, you got to be – you're going to end up having certain people in the business that know our game. And they play our game as well. And if you tell a realtor who's used to making 3% that, hey, sell this to anybody and I'll give you a half, they're in heaven, okay?
Okay.
You might not even have to give up half. Anything over 3%, they're amazed by. So it's really a matter of having a relationship with that realtor. And at the same time, you got to have the attitude like you're going to pick up women. If you lose the woman, who cares? If I lost the deal, it was nothing. It was a small deal. Whatever. So,
yeah.
And those are the things that typically, when you don't care, they work out. Just like
you're going to pick up women. You're speaking to the car. So with that one, was she under the impression that was your funding partner then? Was it more like that kind of thing?
I don't think I ever said the word funding. I said partner.
Oh, okay.
My partner's going to give you a call. And, I do a lot of just so you guys know, I do a lot of talking, not necessarily fast, but I shovel my words into people so they don't have a chance to ask a lot of questions. I do a lot of talking. As you can imagine, I'm shoveling my voice into their ears. So everything they want, all the answers they want are pretty much coming out of my mouth. And it's hard to explain what I do. But I told her, my partner's going to call you. I work with this guy all the time. He's amazing. You're going to love the fact that he's going to get you the best price we can get you. And that's all she cared about. She wanted to hear a great price, this and that. That's it. And if it died, it died. And, you know, I would have made up another story when I called her about, I'm sorry, we got to walk away. But in this scenario, it worked out. And you just got to pump up the piece. As long as the person you're dealing with has you in their mind as the guy they're trusting, they like me, okay? I schmooze people. I talk to them on the phone. I'm part of their family after a 20-minute conversation. So when I call them in a few days and say, listen, here's what's going on. I'm going to have my buddy help you out here. He's going to call you tomorrow. And the guy does it. And he took the ball from there. I have another one down south yesterday or 2 or 3 days ago. You know, it was a matter of talking to a property manager to get access to show other people, you know, other buyers the house. So this woman who's an agent and has a lot of investors called me to get access. And I knew it was going to be a nightmare to coordinate. So I gave her the property manager number. I said, call this guy, tell him you're my partner, and get access. And she's going tonight at 5, you know?
There you go. Okay. And hey, secondly,
I'm sorry.
Hey,
no, I was going to say, secondly, yes.
Go ahead, Chris.
All right. So I was going to say real quick, I'm having an opposite problem now. I'm getting contracts coming in fast and furious signed. But we're, you know, again, I was on the phone with Gary. We were working through a bit of a data issue with the virus campaign. If I'm on the phone today, I'm calling hedge funds. I'm pretty much searching everyone in the comps to see if they're interested in this property that I'm trying to move on because I'm almost out of time on it. Any suggestions on? I'm obviously calling realtors too. I'm texting them and stuff. Any suggestions on moving things quickly? Aside from I guess the obvious, is there anything that's been working for you, Steve, or do you sell them yourself? I'm not sure.
I would say, I honestly go for a lot of other wholesalers that have customers, that have buyers, because at any given moment, you know, if you know 5 wholesalers, they got somebody calling them saying, I need a deal, I need a deal, I need a deal. So you let them go to town. And also, any realtors, like straight up realtors, which I, you know, unless they know the way it works, like if you talk to somebody and they, how do you do this? Hang up on them. You know, don't even talk to them anymore.
No, I've been asking, do you work with investors? Do you have cash buyers, et cetera, et cetera? Then I've been going into it.
Exactly. But then when they start questioning anything, the problem is there's a lot of older women realtors, no offense to women or realtors, that, you know, there's all these rules and things they think they got to do, and they don't. So.
I hear you.
Hey, Eamon?
Yes, sir.
I totally blanked out yesterday because I know you're in Southern California working a different market. Send me an email to dealhealth@reivault.com and say need buyers and please forward to Gary just so it gets – I think I actually have 2 contacts for you to get this property sold.
In Georgia?
Yeah. Yeah, actually awesome. I do. I got a whole bunch. So
my name. Okay.
A couple of buddies of mine, I'm sure they can hook you up, and they're lenders too. They're rehabbers and lenders, and I'll give you their cell phone to text them.
Gary, I didn't even sleep last night, so you're an angel. God bless you.
Yeah, no, there's a couple I think I can hook you up on that. Hey, while we have you, Eamon, you actually had a couple of seller objections yesterday that were really good that I think would be helpful. One was the seller said that they had a tenant in the property and they didn't want to disturb them. The second one was they wanted to keep the tenant there in the property, and you asked what to do with those types of things. And then the third was you had a seller that was concerned with the fact that they've had other wholesalers that have locked up the property and gone nowhere. You want to ask those, and then let's get Chico's and Steve's perspective, too. That would be helpful for the group.
Sure, yeah. Just as Gary said, starting at the top, I actually owe this guy an email because he emailed me back last night. And Chris, this is the one that I sent to you at Deal Help, where we agreed on a price, sent him out the pre-sale, called the follow-up that he indeed received it, and said, yeah, you know, I'm looking at this thing here. It says you're only putting in $100 deposit, and this guy's in South Carolina. The property's in Atlanta, Georgia. You're only putting up $100, so I'm concerned that, you know, if you go in there and look around, my seller might get spooked that you're doing that, and then I may lose my tenant may get spooked, and I may lose the tenant and then be out, you know. And so that's the issue there.
You're concerned with spooking tenants?
I'm not. I'm not even there. I'm across the country, but the seller, he's in a different state. He's an absentee landlord, and so I sent him the pre-sale. We were good on price. I just called to confirm that he received it, and he's like, yeah, I'm looking at this thing here. A couple issues. You're only putting up $100, and also I'm concerned that if you look at this property and you don't like it, then my tenant may, you know, go the way of the dinosaur over here, and then I'll be left holding the bag. And so I was like, you know what? I'm gonna ask my partner about that and get right back to you. So
the answer to that is when somebody, you know, questions, you know, they don't want to. I personally, and I go on this when I'm talking to a seller, I don't want to spook any tenants because God forbid I got to walk on the deal. I'm leaving somebody, and I can't sleep at night if I left somebody with their property but their tenant's leaving. That's terrible.
Agreed.
That's not a good way to do business. So
Agreed.
Every person I send to the property. And if especially when the tenant could be their child. Some of these people are, you know, misleading their own children. But the person coming to see the property is either a mortgage guy who's just inspecting, an insurance guy. I send a guy to take pictures so I know what it looks like for mortgage or insurance purposes. I use mortgages and insurances a lot because it doesn't tend to spook the tenants. And it sounds normal, and it is kind of normal, you know. Hey, I haven't been there in 3 years. I live out of state. I'm sending a guy to take some pictures just so I know what I have anymore. I forgot. And typically, and, you know, he can also phrase it if he even has to speak to the tenant that, you know, I want to make sure everything's okay, anything, especially that stuff you mentioned that needed to be fixed. I want to get some pictures of that. And he'll love the person coming in to take pictures.
That's
so
great.
Then the other side of that, yep, go ahead.
That's awesome. You know, I never even thought about that either. You could actually take pictures. You could actually use that as a benefit. Not only can we come in there and help it out, but we can send you pictures. If you haven't been out the property in a long time, we can give you an assessment of how things are looking.
All right, and that's gonna tell the seller, by the way, when you go to get a reduction, you saw the pictures I sent you, didn't you? Come on. The roof is coming off the top of the house. So,
no.
You know, that, and then what you do is you set up the – you have the – the seller is setting it up that the tenant's not going to freak out. And I forgot what my next point was.
Well, what about, like, you just got to overcome the issue of the seller saying, hey, there's only $100 deposit, right?
That's how we do things, and that's how we do it. And that my answer is typically, listen, I work for a company. I have a couple investors I work with, and we have an inspection period because, yeah, we're buying this thing, and it is. It's a house that's in, you know, in a not a great neighborhood. And our good faith is that we're going to show up and check everything out. We want to buy it. We want to sell it, you know, buy it from you. And one of our investors wants it. We just got to make sure. And we can't have a bunch. You know, I'm looking at 40, 50 deals a month. I can't have 10% on 50 deals out of pocket every month.
Roger.
It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that.
If I wasn't serious, I wouldn't be going through all this trouble.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You know, and then also the other thing is just to tell them, hey, listen, I don't want the tenants to leave, so I don't want to spook the tenants. So I'm going to be just as careful as you because I the last thing I want to do is the reason I'm buying this property and I'm asking you these questions on the inspection is because I want the tenants in there. And so then you could phrase it in the fact that by saying that you're saying I'm on your side. I'm not looking to disrupt anything.
Absolutely. Okay, perfect. And just moving along, another one Gary wanted me to bring up was another seller said that they have, because a lot of them have Section 8 people in the properties, and then a lot of people, I guess, have been there for many years, and they feel close to these tenants, and they're saying that, you know, whoever your funding partner is, can my tenant stay in the property post-sale?
you know, my answer to that would be, you know what, we're that's our intent, and we're going to do the best we can to make that happen, and I don't see any problem with it. And I would just leave it like that. And now, really, the one who makes the decision is the buyer. Because
right.
if the buyer decides that they want the tenant out, then that's your only buyer. Now, all of a sudden, you can say to the seller, hey, you know, unfortunately, great news is I got the property approved. The kind of negative is that, you know, we're going to have the tenant move out. And, you know, obviously, the better scenario would be that the person remove the tenant after they close on the property, because we don't want the tenant moving out first unless there's a problem tenant. But I would say you agree to whatever you need to agree, keeping yourself
mm-hmm.
open, because you're saying yes, but hey, situations change. And then the situation changes. Now you have to revisit it with them, and you're just trying to get the deal through. At the end of the day, my opinion is they're afraid of the conversations they're going to have with the tenant, because they just want the money. They want to close this damn thing. And so when it presents itself that, hey, this is what we got to do, most of them fold and say, okay, fine, just do whatever you got to do. Keep me out of it.
And you know, what Chris said is absolutely 100% right. What you got to realize is they are emotionally attached to the tenant. They've been there for 10 years. So you could even, I tell the people, listen, I empathize with them. I understand. It's like a member of your family. But the reality is, do you really care at the end of the day? You know, of course you care if the guy's okay. The guy's going to find a place to live. Wouldn't you like to have 60 grand in your pocket and not have to worry about this anymore? And they never say no. So
yeah.
they come around, you know.
Okay.
I've had it done with people with their own kids. So, yeah, these people want the money.
Oh, yeah. Oftentimes, they care less about the kids than the tenants, but that's neither here nor there. And lastly, the last one Garrett wanted me to bring up, which is one I've run into a couple times, is where everything's going well. We agree on a price or we're close. And then I start speaking to the agreement, and they're like, oh, then all of a sudden they realize that they had the same conversation with another wholesaler that left them at the 11th hour, and then they call me every name except the child of God. Wondering if you guys have run up against that and how you handle it.
So just to rephrase, so you're getting ready to get
burned by another wholesaler.
Say that again.
No, what happened? They've been burned by a wholesaler in the past. Is pretty much like, oh, this guy asked me the same questions as you, and blah blah blah, and then you know, I had the property tied up for this time, and then he didn't buy it, and et cetera, et cetera. It's more of like an emotional issue, in my opinion, because they get extremely irate when they kind of put together that I'm a wholesaler because it's happened to them before.
Well, here's you know, and that's going to happen. And unfortunately, it's really hard to come back after another wholesaler hosed them.
That's what I thought.
What I usually end up when I get that in my ear is when I start saying, I understand where you're coming from. I personally work with a couple different investors, and I'm going to do everything I can to get this done in the next. And I tell them the next 10 days. I'm going to tell you in 10 days whether it's a go or not. So I'm not tying it up for 30. I'm not tying it up for 2 months, 10 days. I only make money if it sells, if it gets funded. I don't want to say sells because I'm not selling it. I work specifically for a couple different investors. So I only get paid. I don't get a salary. I only get paid if the property gets funded by one of my guys. So I'm going to do everything I can in the next 10 days. I mean, it's tough to, I mean, maybe Gary has another opinion on that, but it's tough to overcome another wholesaler who is probably has less of a heart than you do.
Right.
And will drop somebody, you know, without any good excuse or any kind of even a good lie, you know, that they have to walk away.
Right.
So you got to empathize and you got to say, and here's the deal. And I've had a deal come to me that I said, listen, and actually the one we're doing up in the small one, I said, listen, I don't know if we could do it, but I'm going to try. And that's when I also set up the discount. I go, I might even have to come back and ask you for a couple grand less. And she said at that time, I'd go this much less. And I go, okay, as long as you're in the – when she said that, I knew I was getting the deal. So you got to empathize. That might be a relationship built – it might be over time. You might save that one over the next couple weeks or months because you got to get to know them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And always agree with the seller. So don't you and I talked about this yesterday, Eamon, and
right,
that is
right.
Always agree. I mean, they could say the moon is made out of cheese, and I would agree with them. So
I understand.
Understand them, acknowledge the issue, because you want to diffuse the objection, right? And
right.
And have some compassion, and then ask them what would make them feel comfortable. And then you, it's kind of a, you know, who you are and what you do, and just say, look, I totally understand. I completely understand. And, you know, I can, and then just walk through, you know, unless you were to make the deal, unless you're able to buy the property, you're not making any money. And
right.
All the time and effort, et cetera, is wasted. And you want to buy the property, and you want to do it right. And then just go, you know, just continue to ask them what would make them feel comfortable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just address the objections. A lot of it is the seller just wants to be heard, and they want to feel comfortable because they really don't know who you are. And you know
right.
what? Always follow that up in writing. Always follow it up. There's 99% of the real estate investors in this market, especially the people that are out of the seminars. You know, there's a lot of people that are going to a seminar, they get excited, they think they're going to make a gazillion dollars, right, in their underwear without ever really even talking to a seller. And they kind of destroy the business for, you know, those of us that are, you know, the real investors. And so follow it up in writing. You know, pre-sell is fantastic. You could actually take the pre-sell and customize it on your own. Get something in the mail, right?
Yeah.
And always acknowledge, you know, answer. It's not a question and answer. It's an objection and an objection handler to move
right.
forward, right? You and I talked about this yesterday. I always assume 3 no's equal a yes,
yep.
right? I actually call it 5 no's equal a yes, and I just assume that, you know, you're going to have some kind of no. And if you get to the end of the deal and everything is perfect, that's when I start worrying, right?
Right, right.
And it's fun. And, you know, initially, the first couple of deals are a little nerve-wracking, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's second nature. It's So we looks like we got a couple other people in the queue. Chris, you want to open it up? We can always come back to you, Eamon. Those are great, great questions.
No, I'm all good. Hey, thanks a lot, Chris, Gary, Steve. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
No problem. Let me open up Pittsburgh first.
Pittsburgh.
Hey, guys. This is Art.
Hey, Art. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just had a couple questions. I wanted to kind of go back to your first part of the call on pricing a deal out. I'm also was having some issues with that, and what I had been doing basically is kind of going out to the properties first just to kind of assess what type of cost of repairs was going to be there before I made any kind of offer. I'm finding that it's taken a lot more longer to get a deal together than I want, so I started making offers, you know, without seeing the properties and just kind of figuring in my head what the cost of repairs might be. And then I made the offer, got the sale, went out to the property today, and it was a total shithole. So I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. Really, what is the best way to do something? I mean, now I know I got an overpriced deal, period.
You got it into contract. You got it into contract, though, right, originally?
Yes, I do.
And what was the price you got it into contract?
$24,000.
Is the property occupied?
It's currently vacant.
So that's the key thing, I think. So whenever, you know, most of the deals that we look at, that we do deals on, and that, you know, we put on the contract, we've never seen them. And even we've never even been inside of them, and we still sell them. Most of them have a tenant inside, so it has to be livable. Whenever we encounter a property that is vacant, and the seller says, oh, it's been vacant for a year, all of a sudden now we start to really slow down, and we'll go through the effort of getting pictures, et cetera, because now we really have to understand the condition. Because, you know, if somebody's living in there, that's a big difference on the property versus if it's been vacant for a year or whatever. Would you agree, Steve?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll even make an offer without the pictures, but I need to ask them questions like, okay, it's been vacant for 2 years. What kind of work do you think it needs, really? Did you add anything to the property? When they start telling you all this stuff about the property, that's, you know, a red flag. If it's been vacant for 2 years, no, but there's leaks nobody knows about. There's foundation cracks nobody knows about. So it's a low ball scenario. And we typically don't like to buy things that have been vacant for a certain amount of years, because typically they're vacant for a reason. You know, nobody can live in it. There's a difference between livable and non-livable. A non-livable house, you know, I don't know your market, so like assessed value is a great price to pick stuff up at. But if it's even at assessed value here and it needs everything, you're dropping that in half. And it's nothing they haven't heard before. And you got to, again, just like a woman, you got to be willing to walk away from the date.
You know, I think going back to your original, your main question, though, I think that the deciding factor is whether or not to take a chance to see something or not to see something. For us, a lot of it depends if it's vacant or not. If it's vacant, more than likely we want to get a better feel of it on the inside. But if it's occupied and it's especially, you know, if there's a tenant in there, then we know that it's livable to a certain extent, or otherwise somebody wouldn't be there.
Okay.
So Art,
yes.
Have you sent any buyers out to the property?
No, I have not. I just was out there this morning taking the photos. I have two investors that are particularly interested in the property in that area, and I haven't sent it to them yet. But I'm going to end up taking a haircut on it.
Yeah, well, get your buyers to go out there and look at it and mark it up to what you are trying to do and get their perspective. And then if they say they're not interested, then ask them what price they would be interested in. And find out, you may have to go back to the seller and get it for 10 grand or 5 grand. You know, there is some price that you can make money on that deal. So the question is, what is that price? And you're not going to know until the buyers come in and tell you where they need to be.
Right.
Chris, we did that, the deal in Oakland, California, that we're closing here. We put it under contract at 220, and we're trying to sell it for 245. We sent out a couple of buyers, and the buyers said they weren't interested. And our acquisition manager just came back and said, it's not going to work. Deal's not going to work. The property needs $70,000 worth of work. And Chris, you and I said exactly the same time. We said to Percy, so did you ask him what price would work for them, right? And so he called back and got a hold of Diana, and Diana was dumbfounded. She goes, well, if we could get it for 220, we'd do it. So we're in the contract for 220, and we could sell it for 220. So what do we do? We just called the seller and just said, hey, we need a price reduction. Got them to 200, and then ultimately we bought it for 190. So that's, yeah, I figure out what the buyers want for this property.
Yeah, the other piece that I didn't mention was that this guy still has a $20,000 mortgage on it, so I'm kind of limited as far as where I could go. If you know,
not necessarily, Art. You can actually ask the seller can come with proceeds at the close to get the property sold. I've seen that happen. It doesn't happen all the time. Mm-hmm. But let's say you need to be into, let's say he needs the seller, you need to buy it at 16, okay, or 15. You can go back to the seller in order for them to sell it, they got to come to the closing table with some money. Sometimes that'll happen.
Okay. All right.
Some of these sellers, they want to be out of the mortgage. They want to be out. They want to cut their losses. So it has a price at some point. You know, you probably won't make as much money as you were hoping for, but you should make something.
Okay. The other question I had was, it's not a question. I came across a private lender that I wanted to ask you about. Been kind of too good to be true scenario. The guy is, the website is promofundingpartners.com. It's sort of like a membership site. I came across him. Actually, he contacted me through my Barron Marketing Solutions for Infusionsoft implementation. You know, I started talking to him, and he's lending money up to 95% at 3.25%, some unsecured. And I was wondering if you had ever heard of this company. I don't know.
I haven't.
I'm looking at their bios on their website. I don't know.
95% at 3.25%?
Yep. That's what he told me.
Were you looking at that for you to close on a couple of deals, or what were you looking at it for?
Well, yeah, I was looking at it to, you know, potentially start buying properties with that kind of money. I mean, why not?
Well, and for you to rehab?
Yeah, he gives them for rehabs. He gives them for unsecured auto loans.
I mean, the couple of things that come to my mind is, I mean, number one, obviously, depending on your knowledge of the local market, you know, I'm a big fan of making sure that, you know the numbers, you know that what properties are selling for, thus, you know, wholesaling first, and then migrating to potentially closing on some deals, but only after you know for sure that something is a deal, 100%, so you're not in a position to lose money. Another suggestion would be if you feel that that it's legitimate, but you want to see how it plays out, you could keep in mind one of your buyers and then say, hey, by the way, if you want to buy this deal, I have a great source of funding, and you kind of watch it from the sidelines and make sure that it is what it is, and you test it out on somebody else before you do it.
You kind of read my mind.
Is it recourse or non-recourse money? It's non-recourse.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Oh, are you personally guaranteeing on the loan, or is it just backed by the property?
No, it would be backed by the property.
That's not crazy.
Go for it.
Give me your number. Gary, how does that sound, Gary?
I just thought it was too good to be true. You know?
Everybody should just pause and want your
number. I'd go down the path. I'd look at it, but I don't personally. I will never ever personally guarantee for a loan.
No, I wouldn't
at all. As long as it's back to it's non-recourse. Period. End of story. I've got a lot of people that actually sign on the dotted line, and I've seen too many stories. You know, this is a business. We got to run it like a business.
Right.
Just the way it is.
He might have clauses, by the way, and I'm not very well versed in it, but there might be clauses in there that forego any foreclosure process, and if you miss a payment by an hour and a half, he comes and takes the property. You know, that kind of scenario. So you got to look at
it.
I mean, that's okay. From my perspective, that's okay. That's actually okay. You know, it's like if you're not making payments and they get the property, that's, you know, that's one way. But if you can get 3.5% or 4% or 5% money, 90%, non-recourse, go for it.
Yeah.
If it's real.
Yeah, I don't know. I just came across. I turned it over to one of my buddies that's still doing mortgages, and he signed up for it. And I said, just keep me in the loop if you send anybody through it. I want to know if this guy's for real.
Yeah. So would I.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear something like that and, you know, he wants to be a household name and blah, 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 I'm like, okay, hair starts standing up on the back of my neck, and is this guy real or what? Anyway, I just wanted to throw it out there. I didn't know if you guys heard of him. You've been doing this a lot longer than myself, so.
Okay.
No, sir. Thank you. Let us know what happens.
Yeah, I will.
All right. Well, Chris, we should probably wrap up the call. I know both you and I are a little late for another call, so hold on real quick. All right, Chris, anything? Any closing remarks, Steve? Chris?
No, just at any time. We always say this. Anytime you guys need anything, just send us an email to dealhelp@ariabold.com. We'll look at any scenarios. We'll look at if you have an issue with a lead or you have a hard time with something, whatever the case may be, just, you know, we're available to you throughout the week, not just on these calls, obviously. So
feel free to ask, and we'll make sure that we'll get you the answers you need on anything whatsoever.
Steve, any closing remarks?
Just be up in front with everybody and have a great day. You can't go after any deal like it's the last deal you ever got. You don't need any deal. And that's all I have to say. And thank you for having me on the call.
Awesome. Well, great, great having everybody. I would just reinforce, always speak the truth, always work in the light. There's lots of money. Sellers, I always say honor the seller. There's a lot of money to be made. The bigger the problem, the bigger the series of objections that are coming from the seller, like bad tenants or what have you, the more money we make. So with that, have a great week, everybody, and we'll look forward. Actually, Chris, you and I are not going to be on the call next week. We're going to be traveling to San Diego, correct?
Yes, we're going to be in San Diego on next week, actually.
You're right. So we'll make an announcement via email to everybody. So we'll see you in on this call, same time, same place, in 2 weeks. Have a great week, everybody. Take care.
Take care.